Rule number 12, pet a cat when you encounter one on the street. My name is Connor. I'm filling in for Tucker this week. I'm one of the assistant pastors here. He is at a wedding in Washington, and so him and his family are there. And today, we are going to be opening up the Gospel of Luke. The rule that I just quoted to you is from Jordan Peterson's 2018 book here on the screen. It's called 12 Rules. It's the 12th rule, the final rule for life, an antidote to chaos. Now, you might be familiar with this book. Some of you probably are. In the first few years, it sold 5 million copies, and by now it's sold around 10 million copies. Many people were helped by the rules that he laid out, by the things that he said, by having some semblance, an idea of how to live their lives. Young men in particular took a liking to it, and it caused somewhat of a cultural phenomenon going into and through the pandemic. Became a global bestseller and was on Audible's number one for many weeks. It catapulted him and his speaking to unparalleled heights for him personally. But he wasn't the only famous American to do something like this. In fact, Americans have been doing this since the time America became America. Thomas Jefferson famously had his 10 rules for practical life. And if you read them, a lot of them are very helpful and good, and he followed some of them. One of them I find funny. He said, stay out of debt as much as possible. If you know anything about Thomas Jefferson, when he passes away, they have to sell all of Monticello to pay for all of his debts. Benjamin Franklin, there on the left, he famously had 13 virtues that he said were the way to live. And the story goes that he set out to reach perfection by spending 13 weeks practicing the 13 principles, 13 virtues, and every week he practiced one for 13 weeks and in hopes of becoming perfect and doing all the things. He said it didn't really work, but it was helpful to do. Now, my question for you is, have you ever written or thought about what these rules for your life might be? My guess is some of us have, and if you haven't, you at least, if I gave you a few minutes to write out the rules for your life, could jot down 3, 4, maybe up to 12 or 13 fairly quickly, because we all have, whether we had consciously thought about it or not, some rules that we live by, ways that we make decisions and how we decide what we are going to do. This question, though, is not just an American question. It's actually a biblical question. When you read the Old Testament, and some of us probably have, and if you have, you know it's hard to read. And one of the reasons it's very difficult to read is because there are, in the Old Testament, not 12, not 13, but 613 rules for living. Now, you can imagine, as Israelites trying to follow this, they tried to think of some ways to simplify it. How can we simplify all 613 of the laws and commandments given to us by God through Moses so that it's easier to follow in our day-to-day lives? How can we simplify it? And so people in Jesus's day are having this conversation, and we know this because there's this collections of writings from around that time called the Babylonian Talmud, and in there is this quote from Rabbi Simlai. He was a teacher in Israel just before the time of Jesus, the generation previous, and he says this. He says, Micah, the prophet, came and he reduced the law to 3. So 613 down to 3, that's more manageable. Seek justice, love mercy, walk humbly with God. That's in Micah chapter 3. Isaiah, in Isaiah chapter 56, reduces it down to 2. Keep justice and do righteousness, even more doable and rememberable. Amos reduces it then down to 1, he says. In Amos chapter 5, Amos says that God says, seek me and you shall live. Seek me. Habakkuk also reduces it down to 1, saying, the righteous will live by faith. In Habakkuk 2, it says that. And you might be wondering, well, I'm a Christian, I love the Bible, and so I want what the Bible says to be true for my life, and I want to live it out. And so which one is it? Because seek me and live, it kind of overlaps with the righteous shall live by faith, but it's not quite the same. So how should I live? How can we actually formulate this in a helpful manner? Well, there's a famous story about this guy. He's a Gentile who went to visit a rabbi around the same time, right before Jesus, named Hillel. And he goes up to Hillel and he says, I want you to teach me the whole law. I'm a Gentile. I don't know any of it. Teach me all of the law and the prophets, all of the Old Testament, while I stand on one leg. So before I put my other leg down, As long as it takes me to stand like this, I want to learn the law. And Hillel responds, that which is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. He says, this is the whole Torah. The rest is just commentary. Go and learn. So which is it? That sounds maybe a little bit familiar, more familiar to our ears, but which is it? How do we live? It's a question that the people in Jesus' day were asking. It's the question that we're asking. What's a way that we could figure out how to live day by day in light of what God has done and wants to do through us? And so when Jesus, as we open to Luke chapter 6, verse 31 today, in his Sermon on the Plain, when Jesus tells us what he's about to say today, he's not entering into a conversation that hasn't been had before. He's not starting a brand new theology on reducing the law and trying to figure out how to summarize it. He's answering a very common question in his day. And likewise, he's answering a very common question in our day. How do we live? How can you sum up what all of God is saying in a memorable and helpful way so that we can make decisions based on God's will? This is Jesus's answer. Luke 6, verse 31, and just as you want men to do to you, you also do to them likewise. This is probably well known to each of us, probably maybe more famously, do unto others as you would want them to do to you, what we would call the golden rule. Matthew adds a little bit when he quotes Jesus saying this. He says, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. So he says the Old Testament can be summed up. Law and the prophets is Jesus' shorthand for saying the Old Testament. It's how they would have referred to it. And he says, what you want men to do to you, do also to them. Now, for you faithful and fervent Bible readers, you might be wondering, you might have thought before, well, that's true. If that is what the whole commandment is, that's what you sum it all up with that. Then what about what Jesus says in Matthew 22, when he's asked by a Sadducee who was a lawyer, and he gives a different answer. We'll read that. He says this. He says, teacher, the Sadducee comes to Jesus, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Now you might know what he's about to say. Jesus says to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and the great commandment. And the second, he says, is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. So you might be wondering, well, Jesus, is it one or is it two? I thought you'd clear it up, but you kind of just muddied the water a little bit. Well, here's how I think we make sense of it. Jesus, when he's asked by this teacher, how do we understand the whole law and the prophets? What's the greatest commandment? He's responding as a good teacher would. He's responding to that particular question in the particular way the question's asked. So when Jesus says to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself, he's actually quoting from Leviticus. So he's giving the answer that this man was asking for. Now, Jesus is a great teacher. He's a great rabbi. And so he answers that man in that way. But when he's preaching the Sermon on the Plain and also the Sermon on the Mount, he's preaching something that he wants people to go home and remember. He's preaching in the mountain, and then the people are going to go home to their cities and their families, and he wants to teach them in a way that sticks, that they can remember, because they're not going to be there with tape recorders, and you can get the YouTube video. They don't have any of that. They had to remember it. And so what he says to them is he sums up, you shall love the Lord your God, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself, with something that is catchy and memorable and clear and helpful. He says, you shall love people. You shall love them by doing unto them as you would want done unto you. That is how you live. That is a summation of the law and the prophets. And you know that this is a good teaching of Jesus. You know that that's a helpful way to phrase it, because if you went out to the streets of Boise and you asked most people, probably 9 out of 10, if not 10 out of 10 people, what is the golden rule? They could probably tell you word for word, do unto others as you would want done to you. Most people, certainly most people in a church congregation, and certainly most people that heard Jesus' teaching were going home, they could remember this. Not only is this, what Jesus is saying, is summing up the law and the prophets, but it also sums up his Sermon on the Plain. As we've gone through so far, the Beatitudes and the woes and love your enemies, this statement really sums up everything that Jesus has talked about and is going to talk about. Now, the way that we've learned to read things throughout probably middle school, high school, elementary school, how you probably learned to write an essay is sequential or linear. So probably most of us, if we had a good writing teacher in the American style, said to you, you want to start your essay with a thesis. And in your thesis, you're going to say what you're going to argue for. And then you want to give like three paragraphs arguing for that point and make your point very clear. And you want to make it so clear that at the end, you can give a conclusion where you sum up everything that you said. And it's clear, it's to the point, and people can know where you stand on this issue. It probably sounds familiar to most of us. Well, for ancient Israelites, learning to read and write and tell a story or convince, the way that they would learn to write is circular. So not A, B, C, but they would read something, they would write something, they would read it, and they would read it over and over again. So they would read the Sermon on the Mount once it gets written down, or they would remember it over and over again in this circular manner. And when you do it that way, when your reasoning is circular, the thing that's at the center is actually the thing that stands out. And so for Luke and for his readers, the thing at the center was the main point. And what's at the center on the Sermon on the Plain is love your enemies and do good to those who persecute you. And as you continue in that paragraph, this is the summation of all that Jesus has said in this paragraph. So the summation of the center part of Jesus' teaching, of the main point of the Sermon on the Plain, is this: to do unto others as you would want them to do unto you. And because that's the case, this is how we read everything in the Sermon on the Plain. So you want to understand what Jesus is saying when he's giving the Beatitudes or the woes? Go back to this. It brings it to light. We'll take verse 30 right before this as an example. Jesus says, "Give to everyone who asks of you, and from him who takes away your goods, do not ask them back." Now, if we were just to try to live that this week, it would be incredibly difficult, right? In fact, if we set that out as the way that we were going to govern a nation or rule a city, it probably wouldn't work, right? Most of us recognize that's just the way towards anarchy. So how do we make sense of this? Well, let's put this into practice. Jesus says, the center of this, do unto others as you want done unto you. So give to everyone who asks of you. Okay, if I'm somebody who is asking something of someone else, if I need something, what would I want someone to do for me? So the teaching of Jesus is to say, let's put myself in that person's shoes. Let's think about what it would be like for a moment. If I was that person and I came to me with a question of, can I have that? Or can you help me with this? Well, it probably would have been hard to get to that point and to admit that I need help. It probably would have been a kind of a show of humility to even ask the question. And I'm probably hoping that I respond with kindness and give a yes, and then I help them begrudgingly. Kind of hoping that person would take me into consideration and see my need and not ask too many questions, whatever it might be. We begin to put ourselves in that person's shoes, and all of a sudden, this becomes truly a way to live and begins to make sense. Now, the second part gets even harder because it's talking about those who steal from you. He says, from him who takes away your goods, do not ask them back. So Jesus is saying, put yourself into their shoes, do to them as you'd want done to you. If I'm somebody who's needing to steal at the point of theft, to make my life make sense and work, what would I want someone to do for me? Well, I'd probably want them to allow me to take the thing that I took and maybe even find me and forgive me and give me more and answer the root problem of why I have to steal. It begins to make more sense as we think about all of Jesus' teachings in light of this, the thing that all the law and the prophets hang on. Now, Tucker's made a point throughout this sermon series to point out that the way of love is ultimately the way that we have to make decisions. He's pointed out that if a friend comes to you and says, hey, I'm asking of you for 40 bucks, but last week I asked you for 20 bucks, and that 20 I spent all on my addiction, and this 40 I'm going to spend also on my addiction, then the loving thing is not to say, here, take all that I have, take 40 bucks, and go and spend it on your addiction. The loving thing is to think, well, what would I want done for me? If I was addicted and spending money on tons of money on my addictions, what would I want someone to do? Well, I'd want them to step into my pain, my brokenness, and actually fix the root of that problem. And so this teaching of Jesus, do unto others as you would want them to do to you, helps us to make sense of everything that is in the Bible, but in particular, everything that is in his Sermon on the Plain. So let's take a look at what he is saying by this. And to look at that, we'll look at what he's not saying first. So the first one, I actually got this one from my dad. I was home in Colorado this week, visiting my parents, my sister, and I was chatting with him about preaching this Sunday, and he said, oh, what are you preaching on? And I said, the golden rule. My dad said, oh, I love that rule. Do to others before they do to you. And we laugh, right? Because that's obviously not the golden rule. But if we're honest, that's how a lot of the world functions. That's how a lot of workplaces function. I want to look good before the boss, before you, so I get the raise or promotion. I want to slander you before the boss so that I look good, so that I can get the raise or promotion before you slander me. It's what happens in politics. We're going to drag your name through the mud before you can drag our name through the mud. We're going to do this before you can do that. It's the way that in many of our families that have brokenness and betrayal in, people act. I'm going to do to you before you can do to me so that I can feel comfortable in this home or this marriage or this relationship. It's the way that it's kind of summed up as a dog-eat-dog world, right? We're going to do to you before you can do to me. Now, that's obviously not the golden rule, but as we go down this list, it gets a little bit closer. So the next one is do more. A little bit better than doing before. Someone's hurt you, so you're going to do what? You're going to do just a little bit more because you need to get even. But they started it. So you just a little bit more to make amends. And then what happens, right? They say, well, you did a little bit more to me, and so I need to do a little bit more to you. And the cycle of revenge kicks in. One of the best movies to illustrate this point, and it's definitely not a Christian movie because it's illustrating this point, but it's the movie John Wick, right? If you know the movie, the start of the movie is him with his dog that his late wife gave him, and his enemies killed the dog. Now, it's pretty bad. Well, John Wick's response, you might think, okay, we can kill their dog or kill two of their dogs. His response is to go and kill everybody in that organization and everybody they know. Like, the rest of the movie is just John Wick killing people. And it's the law of revenge. You hurt me, so I will do more to you. The next law that we often live by and that gets us a lot closer is do no more. Do no more. It's actually, this law comes from the law of Moses. Moses lays out the Ten Commandments and the 613 laws and commandments, and one of them is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. In other words, if your tooth gets knocked out by somebody, then the right response is for their tooth to get knocked out. Tucker's pointed out that in our hearts, we want to do more. Our tooth gets knocked out. We want to knock out their whole mouth. But Moses says the right thing, the just thing, is a tooth for a tooth, an eye for an eye, a life for a life, or whatever it might be. And this gets us closer. It doesn't get us quite there. This next one is going to sound familiar. It's going to sound like Hillel. He says, do no harm. Do no harm. In other words, don't do to others what you don't want done to you. This is getting a lot closer. We're going to think about other people. I'm not going to do to them what I don't want done to me. This is, if you know anything about Buddhism, this is kind of the principle that Buddhists live by is do no harm. I'm not going to do anything wrong to other people. And it's okay. It gets us close. But Jesus, summing up all of the law and the prophets, giving the summation for what he is about and the people he's trying to create, the people group, the church that he wants to create and how they're going to live. He says, do unto others as you would want done to you. See how big of a step forward that is. Not just don't do or do no harm or get even. Jesus is saying proactively and regularly think about other people and what is going on in their lives and then do to them what you would want done to you. Do the good thing to them before they do a good thing to you. Do a good thing to them even if they could never do a good thing to you, even if they've never done anything good or have always done bad. Look to others and ask, what can I do for them that I would want done for me? One author sums it up this way. He says, think of the best thing you can do for the worst person and go ahead and do it. Think of what you'd really like someone to do for you and do it for them. Think of the people to whom you are tempted to be nasty and lavish generosity on them instead. These instructions, he says, have a fresh, spring-like quality. I love this. They are all about new life bursting out energetically like flowers growing through the concrete and startling everyone with their color and vigor. The picture of walking down the streets of downtown Boise and there's flowers poking through the concrete, poking through the sidewalk. That's what it's like to live this way, to do unto others as you would want done to them, done to you. Living that way in a world that does no harm or gets even or gets revenge shines. It shines in the workplace. It shines as we talk about politics. It shines in the streets of the city. People take notice of that and they say, that is beautiful. That is good. That is the way to live. So the big idea I think that Jesus is getting at is that doing to others as you would want done to you is the guiding principle, the guiding rule for our lives. It's not the 12, it's not the 13, it's not the 613, it's not the 10, 3, the 2, it's this one. Do unto others what you would want done to you. Now, this doesn't give us every single answer. Do unto your spouse as you'd want done to you. It doesn't tell you exactly what to do, but it does point us in the right direction. It's like a compass. My wife and I recently have been rewatching the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. We had a couple over from our community group a few Sundays ago. We watched the first one, and then we're like, we should just watch all of them. I think there's like 5 or 6 of them. And so we're on like 3 or 4 right now. And if you've watched them, you know that Captain Jack Sparrow has a compass. And you know that it's a strange compass because it doesn't point north. And everybody at the beginning of the movie thinks that it's broken. In fact, you kind of think that it's broken. You're like, why does he have this broken compass that can't point north? It's a strange thing to have as a pirate who's sailing the seas, who needs to know where he's going. But you begin to figure out that this compass, while it may not point north, it does work. And it actually works really good. It works really quite better than any other compass that there was. This compass points whoever's holding it to the thing that they want, to the thing that they want most. For Jack Sparrow, it might be treasure, it might be rum. And I think this is how it functions for us. This rule that Jesus gives functions like this compass. It may not seem to work at first. You think, do unto others as I would want done to me. It seems like a broken compass. Doesn't seem like it's gonna create flourishing. And in fact, as you live this out, people will look at you and say, why would you do that? Why would you go there? And it doesn't give us the exact particulars about how to get to the end destination of doing for them what needs to be done, but it points us in that general direction. You might have a million things you could do, and it eliminates 900,000 of them. It gives you just a handful of things to choose from. I'm gonna do the thing that I would want done for me. Now, odds are that your compass doesn't always work this way. I know that there are, though, in our community, in our church, there are people whose this is the guiding principle by their life, and it like never fails. And we are so thankful for you. We need you as role models and models and people that are doing this in our church because we are so blessed because of you. So thank you. Continue on. But if you're like me, your compass isn't there yet, and you need to work on it, and it needs to be fixed so that it can reorient itself to the ways that Jesus's compass works. So I want to give us that in 3 simple practices as we close. The first is to see. One writer famously said, the first act of love is always the giving of attention. I just love that. The first way that you love someone, the first act is to give them attention. A while back, a number of years ago, I went on a high school mission trip for the first time. And we went down to San Francisco. We went to the Tenderloin in San Francisco. And if you know anything about the Tenderloin, it's this place that it's kind of hard to believe that it exists in such a well-off city. There are people who live on the streets, addicted to all kinds of things, and they prepare you for this before you go out. We're going to work with this organization called City Impact, and they take you out to hand out some food and to invite everybody to this block party. And they said, we want to prepare you. You're going to see a lot of crazy stuff today. You're going to see people using the bathroom on the street because this is their home. They live there. You're going to see people using hard drugs on the street. And we know that you are going to be tempted to try to look past them and to think of them as something less than human. But our challenge for you is to, with each person, as you walk by them, do your best to look them in the eye and remind yourself that they, although broken, are made in the image of their creator. And see how that might change the way that you talk with them, the way that you invite them. And it does. It did. This changes the way we relate to one another here in Boise, in community, and in church, and in our families. When we look at one another in the eyes and we see each other, truly see each other as image bearers of our King, it changes the way that we think and act towards one another. Now, that's a great first step. Second step is to begin to feel what they're feeling, to think about what would it be like to be them? What would it be like to have that, to do that, or to live here? This is often called sympathy or empathy. And some of the most sympathetic, empathetic people that you'll meet are the most curious people. Developing a heart of curiosity about other people is one of the greatest and most helpful ways to feel what they're feeling. What would it be like to live here? What would it be like to go through that? To ask yourself those questions and allow for yourself to sit with that? And I can't imagine what it'd be like to go through that brokenness or for that person to leave or for that to happen to me and I end up here and begin to feel what they're feeling. Now, Jesus doesn't leave it there. Jesus says, not feel what they're feeling. He says, do to them what you want done for you. And the final act is to do. So with that in mind, with how you feel about them, how you feel about being in their shoes, do what you would want done to you. Now, while practicing this may get us some results, it's not ultimately enough. One commentator says this, there are two particularly astonishing things about these instructions. First, their simplicity. And you've probably noticed that. Do unto others as you want done to you. That is so simple. He says it's obvious, it's clear, it's direct, and it's memorable. But the second thing that is surprising is their scarcity. They're simple, they're clear, they're memorable, but yet they're not lived out. How many people do you know who really live like this? How many communities do you know where these guidelines are rules of life? He asks, what's gone wrong? Has God changed? Has God changed since Jesus spoke these words? Has God changed since Luke recorded them? Or, he says, have we forgotten who he really is? He gives the answer, only when people discover that this is the sort of God they are dealing with, will they have any chance of making this way of life their own. The first step in doing unto others as you would want done to you is to recognize that that is the God that we serve. You can imagine Jesus looking at us and seeing us and saying, what would it be like to be separated from the Father? What would it be like to live in eternal disconnection with God? And you can imagine him feeling that pain and saying, well, I know that if that were me, I would want somebody to bridge the gap, to do something that could offer me forgiveness. I would want somebody to step in and make that relationship right. And that's just what Jesus does. It's just what Jesus did. He stepped in. He lived a perfect life. He died the death that we were supposed to die. And he defeated death, he defeated sin, and he offered us his Spirit and new life so that we could be connected to the Father again. Jesus did to us what he would have wanted done to him. And as people who want to live in light of what Jesus has done, as a community that hopefully can embody this rule, I think one of the best places to do that is in a Calvary community. And we can do this in all of our lives, but one of the best places to just practice this, to see people, to feel their pain, and to do to them what you'd want done to you, is week by week, gathering around a table, eating a meal, discussing scripture, praying with one another, and then doing all the things that flow from that throughout the week. It's a great practice. As we close, I want to share a story from one of the Calvary communities. This last year, there was this guy who had gone through, he'd been a part of the group for a couple years, and they knew that he was going through this divorce. It had been long, it had been drawn out. He had a son, and they knew that he's going through this. And one night he shows up and he says, hey guys, thank you for praying. Continue to pray. The divorce has been finalized. And I want to be kind to my wife and generous towards her. So I've left her and my son the house and all of the furnishings. And so I'll be fine. I have work, but I'll just have to save up to get a place and to furnish it. And so he goes away. And a couple weeks later, he comes back and he says, hey, guys, praise report. I found a place that I can afford. I'm going to move in. And it's going to be a couple months, though, before my son can visit because I want him to have a bed to sleep in and a table to eat at and a couch to sit on. We'll probably want to watch some football, so maybe a TV. And his community, you might see this where it's going, they heard that. And they said, well, how close are you? And he said, well, I probably have about half of what I need. And there's a couple ladies in the group who said, you know, we are incredible with Facebook Marketplace. We know how to get all the best deals, and we know all the best places to look. And so can we help you with that? And actually, we've talked to the community, and we would love to take what you've saved up, and then whatever that doesn't cover, we'll buy all of that. We'll buy all of that for you. And I saw that man a few weeks after that story got shared with me by the community leader at church, sitting in the front row with his son, who had spent the night the previous night. And this is the way, small example, right? A few hundred bucks helping out a dad in need. Small example of doing unto others what you'd want done to you. But that small example, it shines. It's beautiful. It's the way of Jesus. And so for this week, for our lives together, how can we be people who live this out? That do to each other, that do to the people in our city, what we would want done for us.